Good afternoon and happy Thanksgiving. Today is November 22nd, 2017. I'm Jay Least, and you're listening to the Net Neutrality edition of your On the Spot News Brief.
Hello, and this is Craig Jenke here with Jay. We're here at the Speed of Technology podcast. And Jay, I'm really excited, one, for Thanksgiving, because I love turkey and I love pumpkin pie. And two, to talk to you about net neutrality. What do you have in store for us today?
Well, first of all, I never thought I'd be excited about talking about something with the word neutrality. But the FCC has brought net neutrality to the forefront of all technology news this week. And I think that it's an important enough topic that whether you're a consumer or a business user, whether you're a developer or a CEO, I think this is something that you need to learn about. And so I wanted to really focus today on what is net neutrality. Why are people against it? Why are people for it? And just give a little bit, not necessarily our personal opinion as to whether or not it is important, but just a little bit about what it is and hopefully, you know, help further the conversation for people.
Cool. I think it'd be great to kind of go over what it is and just touch on it a little bit. So that's our teaser. Before we get into that, do we want to recap last week?
Yeah, well, so last week, I'm excited because our website has had some improvement. We've gotten a little bit more going on Twitter. So the thing that I'm excited about that I think is more for me than anybody else are statistics on podcast listens. We are 750% ahead of the month of October, and we're only 22 days in. I think that's pretty exciting.
Sweet. People are actually listening. Yay.
Yeah.
Thank you, people.
Somebody's listening. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we're not in the thousands of listens. In fact, we're barely in the hundreds of listens. But in October, we only had 20 unique listens, and this month we're over 150. So it's really exciting. It makes me feel like we're not that
off. Yeah, I don't know if I ever mentioned it, but I have 47 cousins on my mom's side, so I don't think they're all listening. But you know, that could be.
Hey, wherever it has to come from, I'm good with it. Even if it's 7 Zune players that you just set up to download, I'm good with it.
All right, thank sweet.
Craig, last week was SharePoint Saturday Chicago. You want to tell us how it went?
Yeah, it went really well. It was something that we tried. We normally do ours out in the suburb in the spring, but we partner with DeVry a lot as a venue, and they reached out to us and said, hey, we would like you to, you know, do one of your events in the city so we can, you know, get some people going there and a little marketing for them. Which was good, but for us, it was like just a two-month ramp up, so we didn't have time to get sponsors, and not a whole lot of speakers were available. So we had 12 speakers. We ran 3 tracks, 4 sessions. It went really well. I mean, the people who attended, we had a little almost 100 attendees, so the people who attended really liked it. Speakers liked it because it was a lot of people in a room. In the spring or in some other SharePoint events, we run 7 to 8 wide tracks, and every once in a while you get a session with 5 people, which isn't a necessarily thing, but overall really good. And it sets us up to be back there next year in the fall.
That's great. No, 20 or 30 people per presentation is a really good average. So even if you're just talking about 3 tracks, I would call that very successful. You said 3 tracks. What were your tracks?
So 1 track was mostly teams, and a lot of people were interested in that. I was surprised that everybody wants to know how to work and how to collaborate better. And one of the tracks was an Office 365, more intro type of what is Office 365, what do you get with it, how do you use it, that kind of thing. And then the other track was an AI track, which you know, building a smarter intranet, how to use AI and get our BI, data analytics type of thing. So there was a couple different sessions on that, using machine learning, and just a general open forum was one of the sessions because one of our speakers didn't show. So two of the other guys, Don Miller from BA Insights talked on it, and Darren, I don't have Darren's last name off the top of my head, but I'll put it in the show notes, had some interesting presentations on that. But Don Miller recorded a community edition of On the Spot that we're going to try to get out there shortly.
Yeah, we've got a backlog of about 6 or 7 community editions. We'll get one out this week, and we'll have one a week going forward. I'm excited to get those out, hopefully on Mondays going forward, just to make sure we have a pattern of that. And the community editions, if you haven't heard one, they're really nice because it's an opportunity for Craig or I to sit down with a community influencer on a specific focus of technology that they're interested in, and find out what they think is happening. It's just a nice way to get a little bit deeper into a specific, you know, specific niche. Craig, you mentioned Teams. You know, when I went to SharePoint Tech Fest, the same thing. There was a lot of conversation around Teams. In the past few months, Microsoft has said Teams and Skype, we know they're very similar. There's going to be a transition and they will become the same thing, at least for Office 365. It looks like a little more information about that has come
out. I was, when it first rolled out and they said that they were going to actually, it made it sound like Teams was going to envelop Skype and that would be the new product going forward. And I thought to myself, that seems like a pretty big merger on two very similar, but not necessarily, you know, built alongside each other compatible technology. So I was wondering how they were going to do that, basically what sounded like overnight. And then I found an article that said that that could be a 3-year transition. So basically Microsoft is using newer infrastructure for voice and video, you know, than what Skype was built on. So I think that transition will more happen in Office 365 sooner, but they're going to need some way to support Skype for, you know, businesses who already built stuff on it for a number of years. I thought that it said it would support that for 2020. It also stated that, you know, there will be an on-premise solution. So I'm curious on what that's going to look like.
Yeah. The parity of features between Skype for Business and Teams could be really interesting. I think similar to what we see in SharePoint and SharePoint Online, Teams will get new features more quickly, and then every 2 to 3 years, an on-premise update will come out for Skype for Business, eventually culminating with Skype for Business potentially becoming an on-premise version of Teams officially.
That's what I took it as too. And I think that's a good recap of some of the stuff that's going on. Do you want to dive into net neutrality? Or is there anything else you want to talk about?
No, let's get right into it. So Craig, net neutrality, like I said, it's super important. And my personal take on the 3-second version of why is net neutrality important is that it ensures that if you pay for internet access, you get access to everything. Liberal, conservative, professional, amateur, foreign, domestic, rich, poor, any of these types of data, news sources, porn, it doesn't matter. Your ISP gives you access to them at the same rate, at the same speed as it would to any other content. And it gives you the ability to get all of it.
I agree that, you know, in theory, net neutrality is a good thing. But I don't know if it's a simple subject. You know, we see a lot of people coming out and basically taking the user's side and saying, yeah, you know what, if big government gets involved with that, or corporations get involved with that, then, you know, they're going to destroy the internet. And while I agree with that, I could see the other side of the argument. So I think for our discussion, I am going to try to play a little bit more devil's advocate on that.
Okay. Now, is just for those listening, are you saying it's your personal stance to be on the other side, or are you just trying to make sure that we are considering all options in the discussion?
I am trying to consider all options in the discussion. Perfect. And I'm going to be honest with you, I don't know where I fall on it, because it is in some areas I can see the corporation and, you know, side of view. So we'll see where I end up at the end of the discussion if you've convinced me of your argument.
Well, that's fair. And I'll be honest, I tend to fall in the middle between liberal and conservative. I believe that there's a certain amount of fiscal responsibility we are not quite meeting, but I also believe that there's a social responsibility that we have to keep in mind, and that you can't just allow a free market to decide who to take care of and how to take care of them. So net neutrality is one of those perfect examples, and I'm glad you're kind of coming from the other side to remind us that you have to consider both sides. So one of the things that I thought was really interesting was that Portugal basically removed their net neutrality rules. Well, they followed some loopholes that allowed net neutrality to be less regulated, so to speak. And what the ISPs in Portugal have started doing is splitting out the types of services that you purchase and giving you the ability to pick and choose. So there's a chart we'll link to from businessinsider.com that shows how one of the ISPs is saying that you can choose the social package. And what the social package does is it gives you access on your devices to Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Messenger, LinkedIn, Pinterest, etc. Or you can choose the email and cloud version, which gives you access to Gmail and OneDrive and G Drive and iTunes and iCloud and Amazon Cloud. Of course, you can select multiple packages. So if you're big into the social and the email areas, you can select those. But that means you didn't necessarily select the music package. So Spotify, Google Play, these are areas where you might not have a package, and therefore your access would be limited at best based on the definition that that particular ISP selected.
Right, and I had saw that, and I don't necessarily know that that's a bad thing. It is interesting because I didn't, what I read, I'm not sure, like, so if I pick the social package, do I just get the social networks that are in there, or does that, anything that's considered social, do I get that? And I think one of the concerns is if I pick the social package and it includes like Facebook, and then there comes a rival along that isn't necessarily in that social package now, how do I get that? And how do they get their foot in the door and be able to grow? So is there a fairness of competition? And I think that's one of the things that people are arguing about. So what do you think about, you know, how competition should work with net neutrality?
Yeah, so one article I pulled off of Huffington Post was an interesting one by Marvin Amori, and I apologize if I got that name wrong. He argues that without net neutrality regulations, an ISP can choose to block content. Now, we just talked about where you selected which content you were interested in, so for them to block your content to iTunes when you didn't pick that package, that suggests it was your choice. His argument is, for example, if you're on the social package and you're on Twitter and you're a Comcast subscriber and you do hashtag Comcast sucks, or let's say you're a Fios subscriber and you do hashtag wish I had Comcast, because let's say you're having a bad night on the phone with the support, right? The ISP could trigger off that and they could limit your bandwidth. And you may never know, because how many people read the 1,000-item description that comes with your user, your EULA? And that's it comes down to the whole, like, we're at Verizon and Comcast are saying, no, we pinky swear, you know, trust us, we won't filter content like that. And I think the argument there is you can't really trust them on that, can you?
I would never trust them on that. But then you start, so that becomes actually an interesting thing altogether, because can they monitor that? Do they have the resources to do that and set that up? And I'm not going to go off topic, but it would be nice to get into a discussion about where AI could fit into some of that and how that could be monitoring it and persuade that. But no, I get that. But, you know, in the same vein, I get, you know, it is their system. You are paying for it. So should I be able to do that? And, you know, it's, if it's in the user agreement and I'm agreeing to that, where I think we have, you know, a lot of people talk about competition. I think what that does is now create a venue for other ISPs to come in and say, hey, you know what, we don't do that, or our prices are lower, or you can get more services. So maybe if, you know, unless government steps in and there's, you know, or Verizon figures out a way to create a monopoly, so that they're the only game in town, that's what I would worry about more. But I would think that there's a possibility of creating more ISP providers to combat some of that and let the market regulate itself.
I'm a big believer in the concept of capitalism and what it can provide over time. It's the over time thing that concerns me. You know, if you see a vendor, an ISP vendor, start doing stuff like this, start blocking the liberal media because they're a conservative-leaning owner, or the conservative media because they don't like Trump, you know, are we looking at a position where it may take months or even years to be able to come after them from either a competitive standpoint or a regulatory standpoint to fix that? And at that point, what harm has come? And it, from my perspective, that's a really scary proposition to be in.
Yeah, but then, well, so I don't know how you regulate that now. I mean, how is that stopped from being down even with net neutrality? I mean, customers, your ISP providers can do things anyways. It's whether or not they get caught, so.
Well, that's, yes, that's, I can't really argue against that one.
I mean, do you really have any, so do we really have confidence that what we're being doing now is not being monitored? By either the ISPs or the government.
I mean, and... yeah, that recent Amazon Web Services open database of government tracking, I guess that kind of tells me you really can't trust what's being tracked or not, I suppose.
So to me, it becomes then the more fiscal, you know, conservative, not conservative, but part of capitalism that, hey, if I can take my dollars elsewhere and go to a competitor who provides me better services, more services for less with less restrictions, then that would be the option I go. And I think that fosters innovation and trying to get the most out of, you know, I can spend my dollar with the ISP that I trust the most.
So what about people who are in more rural counties and don't have access to multiple ISPs? I remember when I lived outside Dallas, if you got far enough outside the city, There was one organization that you, one ISP that you could purchase from, and that ISP was a local ISP. You had them only. If they want to restrict you, what are you going to do about it?
Well, again, that's where you. I don't know. That one's a good one because I think it, you know, there's always the market there for ISP. If somebody chooses not to go there, then is that on you as a consumer deciding to live there? And do you need to think about your, you know, all your options? Because quite honestly, that happens, you know, you're really in this rural town, you're really restricted to a lot of things. You know, what kind of healthcare can you get? What kind of food can you get? Where do you grocery shop? You know, those are decisions you make when you choose to live there, in a capitalist world, right? So it's an interesting argument, but I think if there's enough business there, then maybe they go. Or, you know, or if somebody sees a need, what would be great would be more of a wireless type of scenario where they could broadcast from a satellite and figure out how, like, a cheaper way to stream the internet. I don't know. I'm not in that game yet. But
so that actually goes towards the argument that some lawmakers and lobbyists are saying against net neutrality, arguments to take down the regulations that are currently restricting ISPs. And that's that by removing these regulations, ISPs can charge those who use the bandwidth hogging services such as Netflix or BitTorrent, and they can get charged extra for those services. And then the ISPs can use that extra income to feed innovation like building advanced fiber networks that may be either go beyond the capabilities or like you said, a better dish solution that is more cost friendly to consumers. So that is the other side, right? And that's something that you brought up when we were talking about this earlier is, you know, does it actually give those ISPs the ability to quote unquote innovate, which is what a lot of the lawmakers are saying?
Yeah, no, it's a topic and one we're not going to solve here today. I think there's, you know, there's both sides to it. I think it's finding that happy medium in a lot of, you know, the way a lot of problems are solved in the world, which hasn't necessarily been happening lately. Either people take a far, you know, of one point of view or the other and then dig their heels in. But there's got to be a happy medium where we can figure out how people still make money. Because I do think that, you know, some of those streaming videos and stuff and getting access to the dark web, maybe, you know, I can understand why an organization would want to charge more money for that, right? You're eating a lot of my resources up to do that versus, you know, the average ordinary family who, you know, maybe it's just a wife and a husband who only use it to send emails. So why are they paying for a lot more access than somebody who's like maybe a teenager who's downloading Netflix videos left and right? You know, they pay for the same bandwidth. Why are they getting the exact same service when they're not, you know, why aren't they paying more for services that require more bandwidth?
Yeah, I follow what you're saying. This was definitely one of the areas that we talked about again. Like, if I'm downloading a lot of movies constantly, and my neighbor is just doing email, like you said. Should we be paying for this? Should we have to be paying for the same thing? So the potential for options for people who need or desire options, that could be very interesting. I guess it goes towards the unlimited versus limited bandwidth you get with your cell phone, right? I choose to pay extra to get the unlimited bandwidth so that I can put my daughter in front of her Kindle and on the road and let her watch a movie to fall asleep to when we're on the road for 8 hours. So I could see that argument as well.
Yeah. So then I wonder, you know, does it become just a different pricing model where you start looking at bandwidth and the amount of content that people are downloading versus what they are actually doing? So, you know, net neutrality, we kind of look at, well, what are the options that they're, what are they looking at? Are they looking at, and try to, as you said, do content-based net neutrality. So we charge more for what you're looking at, and we'd be able to do that. Maybe if the more simpler model is just the amount of data that you're downloading, should you be paying more? And I think there's some around that, but a lot of times I just see it at the ISPs charging based on speed that you want to get that.
Yeah, I think I think there's a lot of still unanswered questions. Craig, I do appreciate you bringing the kind of, not the opposite view, but just kind of making sure we're thinking of potentially all sides. In summary, my current position on this, my current position is based on the following. Detractors of net neutrality are saying that we're all going to benefit by removing a lot of this regulation and opening it up to a more of a free market based access. But the canary in the coal mine for me is the following. I'm seeing conservatives and liberals in my social networks talking about how dangerous this is. You know, the conservatives are saying you can't trust Big Brother. And frankly, I think that's why we saw the political changes over the last 18 to 24 months that we've seen, is that lack of trust for the status quo and how things are going. And their concern is, if you're trusting Verizon's pinky swear that they're not going to do things in a vengeance kind of way, you know, how can you trust them? Liberals are saying that freedom of information is important and freedom of access is important, and you can't put people in a situation of having to decide between full internet access or Chinese food. Well, maybe not. That was a bad choice. Let me rephrase that and edit that. You can't put people in the position of deciding between the full internet package or the social internet package and being able to afford their rent. So it's at a most simplistic point of view, I think it's a really dangerous slope, and removing all regulations is probably not the right way to do it. But similar to what Republicans were trying to do with healthcare, simply destroying what we have today, it's really dangerous unless you have something in place to help pick up where you know what's working is there and what's not working gets fixed. I don't know. It's I'm rambling now.
I know. It sounded like it. So no, I will say I somewhat agree with you. I think net neutrality is important. I just think we got to find that balance as to where people are allowed to make money and profit off of it, and then take that, you know, ideally, and you know, businesses are good at this, to taking that profits and rolling them back into innovation instead of, you know, just throwing them into their pockets. It's interesting because I think they get a lot of bad press lately about being just money grabbing things, when, you know, the companies that do that and don't reinvest into innovation are the ones that become dinosaurs and get surpassed in, you know, by something else. So I think you got to have some faith in the market and in capitalism that they're going to take this money. And yes, they might be evil and do things that you wouldn't like, or not as generous as you want, but they take the money and a lot of times they give back to charities. They reinvest it in innovation, which leads to bigger and better things and even more opportunities down the line. So it's trying to be the best of both worlds, but I just like to keep my eye on you know, it's like keep your eye on your wallet, you know, type of thing too. So, and I don't know that I trust Big Brother that much, but I don't trust the corporations, but we gotta, you know, we gotta give them a little bit of slack because they do some good things when they're firing on all four cylinders.
So,
I guess.
So it sounds like we're right back at the beginning. We're not really sure entirely which direction to go. Maybe pulling down the walls isn't quite as far as we should be going, but maybe cleaning up some regulations so that there's a little more of an open market possibility is more appropriate.
Well, kind of honestly, I like how it's working now, so I'm all for not changing it. But if I was an ISP, I would definitely have an argument for changing it. That's all I'm saying.
Okay. All right. Well, there it is. I think we've gone on long enough for this brief, as we call them. Greg, it is Thanksgiving tomorrow. Do you guys have any big plans?
Yes, I'm cooking a 24-pound turkey and having probably about 14 people over, mostly my wife's family. My parents will be here. What about you? You doing anything good?
So we had a Friendsgiving with our neighbors last weekend, which was pretty cool. We had about 15 or 20 people all hanging out at our neighbor's house, and they're professional cooks, so that was very tasty. Tomorrow we have a very small, just family event. About 7 of us will be there. And then Friday we're having a little bit bigger. I'm still calling it family Thanksgiving because it's people who I'm not blood related to, but call my family. We're having a Thanksgiving leftovers party on Friday. So,
sweet. I'll be decorating my house with,
I'm right there with you. My wife and I have actually left all the skeletons on the side of the house. We're going to have the skeletons hang our Christmas lights. We're very excited about that.
Sweet. I have, 39 figurines to go somewhere around my house. Yeah, I have, 12 toy soldiers, 4 giant nutcrackers, a nativity set, Mr. and Mrs. Claus, about 5 snowmen. So yeah, it kind of, it's my thing. So,
all right, well,
I do that.
But Craig, it's been a pleasure as always.
All right. I can't let you go without a dinosaur fact.
Dun, dun, dun. Would you believe I don't have one ready?
You don't have one ready? Well, then why don't you tell us where you're going to get the bread for your meals?
Hold on. I'm pulling up a dinosaur fact.
Tell us about that great local bread store you have.
Craig, let's go basic. Did you know dinosaurs existed in 3 distinct ages of our Earth?
I did.
Do you remember what they are?
And I'm not sure if these are ages, Jurassic and Triassic and then something, the Pleistocene era. No, that's an era.
Cretaceous. Jurassic, Triassic, and Cretaceous. Wow. Very good, Craig. You got 2 out of 3. You at least got a passing grade if these count.
Alrighty. Well, you have a good Thanksgiving and good night and good news.
This episode brought to you by Jay Leaf and Craig Jenke, two guys who like to talk technology and live in a connected world. The opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the speakers only, and in no way do they represent the opinion of their employers, their customers, or their wives. This has been an On the Spot podcast production.